This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil, now streaming, only on Hulu.
Our guest this week is responsible for piecing together one of the most detailed books on Beatles history. Dubbed the world's foremost authority on the Beatles, Mark Lewisohn spent 10 years writing and researching his 900-page book, Tune In, and it's only the first volume of three he has planned. We caught up with him ahead of the tour of his new Abbey Road show, Hornsey Road, which starts in September. I'm Ellen Kirwan.
And I'm Laura Davis, and this is Beatles City. And 10 years is a long time to work on one book.
Yeah, but he actually spends weeks at a time researching just one simple fact. So if he was to come to Liverpool, he'd spend weeks here really like making sure he visits every source every day. And a lot of the time was spent actually building up trust, he told me, with some of these people who'd never been interviewed before and had really pivotal facts about the Beatles, but they'd never actually spoken to anyone before, no journalists or no historians. So he actually had to spend a lot of time talking and getting to know them, and he's stayed in touch with many of them as well.
So the thing that's so different about his book is that he doesn't take anything without checking out the source behind it.
Yeah, if he doesn't know where it's come from, or if he says if he hears anything that sounds slightly off, he just won't include it in the book whatsoever. He needs to make sure everything is 100% a fact, and any myths that he does hear, he just disregards them. He doesn't even take them on board or try and like dig to the bottom of them. He just disregards them completely.
So it's been more than 5 years now since the first volume was published. So what's he up to now?
Well, he's currently touring the Abbey Road show, but he's also straight into his second and third volume now, which he's saying he's finding a lot easier, because the first book really did focus on them when the Beatles were still in Liverpool and they were still a relatively small band. But obviously in the second and third book, they've really blown up and they're now international. She said, if anything, he's found it easier to verify some of these facts, and there's a lot more documentation on the Beatles at that time. Hi, Mark. Thanks so much for meeting with me today.
Thank you, Ellen. Thanks for having me on.
So you spent about 10 years crafting Tune In, and the response was incredible. What was it like for you to get a response like that?
It was lovely, of course. It's the worst thing in the world, I would imagine, for a writer to have nobody pay any attention to what it is you've done. So I'm really obviously very gratified that it was so well received by people and sold a lot of copies as well. I always knew, it's the Beatles, so it has plenty going for it in the first place, but I always knew that the story needed to be done differently and much more maturely, if I can use that word. So I always felt the story was there, it just needed releasing, and that's what I did.
I think a lot of the success comes from the detail you included. Would you say so?
Yeah, so the first volume is really Liverpool, and it's a Liverpool history that I write with great passion, because I love Liverpool. And I love the people in it, but also its history. And so though I never lived there, I wanted to take the reader right back into the moment on those Liverpool streets and in the clubs and houses. And yeah, it was a great thrill to be able to do that.
During your research, did you come to Liverpool much?
Oh, yeah. Goodness me, yeah. I think I went there. I think it was 27 times I was there during the course of researching the book, often for a week at a time. And, I knew it anyway. But Liverpool was somewhere that I'd always visited and then left again. This was the first time I'd really spent a lot of time there. And spending also in archives and traveling around, you know, I really got to every nook and cranny in the city. And in the end, I was doing lots of long, long photographic walks there, amongst the places that haven't been gentrified or haven't been improved, that they are just more authentic to their time. I love all that.
As you've said, your research did take you back a lot. What was it like to sort of to do that and really time travel back to a different era?
I mean, the answer to that probably is the fact that I was born in 1958. So the 60s to me are familiar. They're not just something that happened way, way back. I actually do understand the mindset and the news stories and the way of reporting that everything had in those days. And that means I also understand the 50s pretty well as well. It's not just like this alien planet, like a 20-year-old today would find the 50s or the 60s, everything being so different. To me, it was all quite familiar. So I just needed to immerse myself in it. And that immersion comes from the passion of wanting to get it right. And being so engaged with the history and the story as I am, that it's just part of my personality, really, to go deep.
Were you always a Beatles fan, and did this draw you to doing a book such as this?
I can't remember life without knowing the Beatles. Their big national breakthrough was 1963, and I was 5 years old, and I was hooked, completely hooked. And I don't really have any memories that predate that. So, yeah, they've been there all my life, but I've known them... In the sense that I was a fan getting records in the 60s, I feel like I've been part of this from the start. But the bit of it that always eluded me was before they were famous, you know. You know, the Liverpool period, the Liverpool and Hamburg years. But I'm just intoxicated with the whole story, so just made it my business to find out everything I could. Whilst also at the same time being conscious of what not to use that people tell you, because you have to be aware as a historian that you can't use everything you're given because some of it is suspect.
What was the most surprising thing you found out and you were actually able to verify?
I wish I had an instant answer for that. And the book is absolutely packed with them. I mean, before it came out, I predicted there will be a surprise on every page, and a lot of readers have been in touch with me to say you were absolutely right. So it's hard for me to cherry pick just one. But just the very act of researching it deeply, broadly and deeply, including a lot of places that have never been researched before, and then putting it together in a way that, laying it all down, I liken it to a jigsaw puzzle. It's about finding every possible piece of the puzzle that you can, and laying them down and seeing what the picture is. And then you've got the whole picture if you stand back. But if you look really closely at it, you've got all the detail. And so it's both at the same time. And I can't think of a single one, but believe me, it was just constantly surprising. All right, there's one quick one. I discovered that between Alan Williams, who was the Beatles' first manager, and Brian Epstein, who was obviously their main manager, that they were also managed by two girls. That I never knew until I actually spoke to them. And I tracked them down for another reason, not for that one. Just tons of stuff, you know. I was being surprised all the time while I was researching it, and I'm meant to be the guy who knows it all, you know.
How did you go about verifying the facts from the myths?
Many different ways, really. I mean, you verify what you can, how you can. Sometimes having one person tell you something is all you're ever going to get. There is no one else around to verify it. But that relies then on the researchers and the historians' instinct for what is trustworthy and what is not. And there are people who you know people from talking to them, and you suss them out, and you probe and try to find out what validity there is to what it is they're saying. And at the same time, you also, a little alarm or a big alarm goes off inside your head when you hear something that doesn't sound right. And that sense comes from the long years of doing this for a job. You can't just pick it up overnight. It has to come with the territory of doing it.
Was there ever a point where you thought that you wouldn't make it to the end of the book?
No, I'm quite a driven, focused person, so I always knew what it was. It had to be at the end. And the same is true now for volume 2, and then ultimately for volume 3 as well. They're many years in the making, but there's always a destination goal, and I never for a moment think I'm not going to get there.
So what can your fans expect from a sequel? What will volume 2 and what will volume 3 be like?
they can expect me to follow the story everywhere it goes, which is pretty much a worldwide explosion. First a national, then an international explosion. And I'll be following it everywhere it goes. And following constantly the Beatles in the middle of it all, looking at them and their lives and the lives of the people who were dear to them, their families and so on. When they leave Liverpool, the book will not. The book will stay in Liverpool as well as be everywhere else as well. So I'm going to tell the whole Liverpool 60s story. The other acts, the people who had known the Beatles and how they coped with the association of such a big thing. And all of it, really.
Have you found that your research has got harder or easier as, you know, as it delves into the Beatles more? And as the Beatles got bigger, did you find that there was more archives around for you to look into?
It's kind of easier in the sense that there's a lot of experts out there for elements of the Beatles story, and I'm able to call on them, their help. So when the Beatles go to Spain, for example, I don't speak Spanish, and there's no way that I can deeply research the Beatles in Spain because I didn't grow up in Spain and I can't understand the ramifications of how they changed the youth culture there, because I don't really know what it was ever like before. And I don't speak Spanish to do the interviews and so on. But there are Beatles in Spain experts who can fill me in completely and who I can send off on research missions and come back and tell me what they found and so on. So there's going to be, you know, the high standards possible will be maintained, and I'll endeavour, as I always do, to make no mistakes at all, but probably impossible to avoid them completely. But nonetheless, that's how it's being done. But the book principally is still an English-British story, because it's all happening here, though the Beatles' impact is felt around the world, and though they do travel to certain foreign countries, they're still living in England with, you know, and working in England, and their families are in England, and they're responding to news stories and so on that are in the British press.
Do you find that myths are actually quite a big problem for you in your research?
Again, not really. I pay no attention whatsoever to myths. It's a word that comes up often when I speak to people about, and the book is, you know, dismantling myths and all of that. But I don't consciously, I don't give my myths any headspace at all. I'm really focused on what did happen. And no, if there's something happened, I'll find out about it. And if it didn't happen, I ignore it. So people think I set out to dismantle myths, and I don't. I really don't give them any regard.
Over the years, you must have met some really amazing people close to the band. Have you ever had a moment where you've really felt in awe by somebody you've met?
I'm not often in awe of anybody. I got the greatest pleasure on TuneIn from speaking to the fans of the Beatles in Liverpool, the original, authentic, absolutely authentic fans. Like, the Beatles' very first fan was a woman called Pat Moran. Literally, she was their first. They ended up with tens, if not hundreds of millions around the world for more than half a century. But there had to be a first, and I found her. And she was a Wallasey girl called Pat Moran. And she had wonderful stories. They were all completely true. She had letters. She had things to back up everything she said. And she had never given an interview to anybody before, because nobody had bothered to find her. And she was one of many Liverpool fans whose company I greatly enjoyed and whose humanity I really warmed to, like Sue Houghton, Sue Cement Mixer, as she was known, and Linda Ness and her friend Lou Steen, and Bernie Boyle, who started the fan club, who now lives in Los Angeles. Great Liverpool people with wonderful values and tremendous genuine stories that had never been told before. Beatle books always tended to have the same people interviewed over and over and over and over and over and over and over, and everything got trodden flat and was lifeless. And I knew that the Beatles story was much more exciting than that. And I just needed to find the people who would unlock it. And Liverpool people came up trumps. But I had to gain their trust first. You know, I had to prove to them that I was worthy of their story being told. that they could tell it to me safely and that I would respect it and respect them.
Do you keep in touch with these people at all?
Yeah, loads of them. Didn't intend to make friends with them, but made a nice human connection with quite a lot of people on that book, and do keep in touch with them, yeah. Because it's natural that you would, you know, once you've made a strong connection, it's natural that you would just kind of, well, keep in touch, and then you do. So, you know, I spend probably too much of every day doing emails, but it's nice to keep in touch with people, of course it is. And I'm interested in them and their lives, you know, and they're interested in mine.
So you're about to head out on a UK tour. What can you tell me about this tour?
Yeah, it's the first time an album has been toured by a speaker instead of a band. So it's me doing a 2-hour theatre presentation about the Abbey Road album for its 50th anniversary this autumn. And the show is called Hornsey Road. For reasons that will become clear in the show. And it's going to be me telling the stories of how the album was recorded, the stories of the songs and the people who made them, you know, why they wrote, how and why they wrote those songs, and how and why they were recorded and the time they were recorded. So it's going to be a little bit like kind of a bit of my third volume, which is not yet written, being done in a theatre a few years early. A contextual and interesting history and kind of done as an entertainment.
So Liverpool is a place that you're going to be visiting. Will you be sticking around after the tour at all?
I've kind of done all the sites, but I mean, yeah. I usually try and get a photographic walk in somewhere because I do love the Liverpool architecture so much. The tour is going to be a really hectic one. But if I can have any extra time in Liverpool, I always do.
Thank you so much, Mark, for taking the time to come and speak with us. And I hope the tour goes really well.
That's a pleasure. Nice to be on.
Thank you so much.